G-32, Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado. Despite a laudable effort, Mr. Byrd, whose soft but stoical presence had always been a constant in Clark McCarthy's life, quickly lost control of his instinctive and valiant attempt to keeping a lid on his feelings upon discovering that one of his oldest and dearest friends was gone. After the collapsing of his head onto Clark's shoulder came the breaking into tears, loud, fast, and intense tears, of a kind only a sudden and unexpected tragedy of these proportions could provoke. And with those tears came the most difficult moments yet for Clark. Seeing the old man cry did not bring forth Clark's innate drive to comfort and protect those he non-egotistically perceived to be weaker than himself, because Mr. Byrd did not fit that bill. Instead, this reaction made Clark feel even less in control of the situation than he'd been moments earlier, which would have surprised him if he had any mental energy to think about it, given that it had already seemed like there was no way down from absolute zero.
"Do you think Phil would want to see you like this?" Clark asked,
not trying to sound overly sharp, but just trying to shake Mr. Byrd out of an unexpectedly open display of grief that he didn't quite know what else to do with. The tone of his voice certainly wasn't sharp, but Clark's bodily reaction was far from as comforting as it would have been had this been someone like Tara or even Dan standing before him. There were no tight arms around Mr. Byrd's back, no gentle hand on the top of his head, and no whispering in his ear about how it was all going to be okay. Part of Clark was simply taken aback by seeing Mr. Byrd, of all people, breaking down so completely, but a conscious part of his mind also knew that Byrd was a very proud man of a certain era, even if not quite so stubborn in his efforts to appear unshakable as Henry McCarthy was, or as Phil Norris himself had been, and that providing too much in the way of physical consolation would likely have brought him more than a small degree of embarrassment. He knew this was the kind of thing he could never explain to the Taras and Dans of the world, but he also knew that he would be embarrassed if the shoe was on the other foot and Mr. Byrd had to comfort him in such a manner. Feelings didn't have to make sense, as Tara sometimes told him in other contexts, and this was a prime example. Clark was the same kind of man as Henry and Mr. Byrd, not a better or worse kind than Dan, Timo, or anyone else who wouldn't have had an iota of self-awareness about how they looked or sounded in such an upsetting moment, and not necessarily even a stronger kind, but certainly a different kind. Very suddenly, as though awoken from a trance, Mr. Byrd lifted his heavy head from Clark's shoulder and pulled himself straight upright, like a private standing before a drill sergeant.
"My legs buckled when I found him," Clark said, speaking to ease any of the potential embarrassment he'd been thinking Mr. Byrd might feel.
Mr. Byrd gulped to gather his composure, then wiped one of his eyes and gave a half nod of acknowledgement.
"I want to see him," he said, lifting his own rarely seen phone from his pocket in readiness to make use of its flashlight function, as Clark had been doing with his.
Clark couldn't reasonably deny Phil's old friend this right, so he walked by his side toward the cornfield.
"There's no obvious sign of injury," Clark said before they reached the fallen corn. "He's just dead."
Mr. Byrd didn't react to this, and indeed didn't react to anything, until he arrived at the same sudden end of the coarse trail that had startled Clark a few minutes earlier. Despite having the dubious advantage of knowing what he was going to see when he looked at the ground, the sight of Phil's vacant and lifeless expression was more than enough to draw another, and this time even more, emotional reaction. After a few uncomfortable moments, Clark took it upon himself to lead the initially resistant Mr. Byrd out of the cornfield before he became truly hysterical. That wouldn't have done anyone any good, least of all Mr. Byrd himself, and it certainly wouldn't have been conducive to the timely enacting of the only next move Clark had in mind. Clark stood back and simply allowed Mr. Byrd to gather his own emotions and regain his bearings, which only took a few moments.
"Now what?" the old man asked, his words coming out with a laudable strength despite the outbursts of sorrow that had preceded them. "I need you to drive back to Birchwood as fast as you can," Clark said.
"Just me?"
Clark nodded.
"We can't both leave him. Well, we have to leave him where he is until we know how the hell this is going to go, but we can't leave him unattended.
Agreed, Mr. Bird said.
Okay, so I want you to tell my dad first, since he's awake, and then I want you both to tell Emma. Gently. I want one of you to call me after you've talked about it for a few minutes and it's sunk in for them, so that we can all talk about it. I'll give you a half hour before I call you, but I really don't want to have to. I want the three of you to call me once you get back there, okay? This isn't something we can tell them about over the phone. This isn't something I can do anything about without talking to them first, and this isn't a scene we can leave unattended. You follow?
Mr. Bird nodded wordlessly and set off for the car. Clark walked with him.
He thought so much of you, Clark, the old man said, fighting back more tears as he opened the driver's side door.
He wasn't one to talk like that, and never to the person he was talking about, but he said it. Clark is just always there, he said. That's what he talked about more than anything else, that you're always there. When something has to be done, you're always the one to do it. He knew that. He just thought so much of you. Your old man will tell you the same thing. He heard it too.
Thanks, Clark said, unsure what else he could add. He watched as Mr. Bird got himself slowly back into the car and sat in front of the wheel for several seconds without turning the ignition. Are you sure you're going to be okay to drive? Clark asked through the open window, doubting this for the first time now that he saw how weakened and shaken Mr. Bird really looked with the car's slow-to-fade inner light shining down upon him. Mr. Bird nodded.
I'll be okay. The plan needs me.
I need you, Clark said. I need you to tell my dad and Emma what happened. Then they can call me and we can decide the next move. But Mr. Bird, I also need you to remember that calling 911 can't bring Phil back to life, but it can bring us a whole lot of shit we're not ready to deal with right now. Okay? You know what Phil would want, and it's not trouble.
I get it, Mr. Bird confirmed.
Good. I'm not even going to go back inside the house until I hear from one of you when you get back to Birchwood. And once you've told them and someone calls me back, not before. We can see about getting Leisha from Fiori Frontieri to see if anything that happened out here had anything to do with them. I guess the security camera footage will be scrambled if it did, but at least that would tell us it did, and we'd be off of square one.
Mr. Bird continued to breathe deeply, not reacting to Clark's instructions in any visible way.
Just tell those two that Phil's dead and make sure you all call me before anyone calls anyone else or does anything else. Clark emphasized. We need to talk this through. If I could drive home with you, I would, but like I said, I can't leave him out here like this.
I said I get it, Mr. Bird quite firmly insisted.
He went on to stress once more that he understood exactly what Clark wanted him to, that he was willing and able to do it, and that he wouldn't hear any third repetition of the plan because he was ready to leave. Clark watched his car turn back towards town and pull away with Mr. Bird at its wheel, rushing back to share the least welcome news either of them could have imagined having to deal with, even after they saw Phil's desperate text-based request for backup. Inevitably, Clark couldn't help but wonder if the 2 minutes he'd taken to fetch Henry to guard over Emma and Piper next door might have been crucial. He tried in vain to push this thought aside, attempting to reason with himself that if such a short period of time could have made any difference, it might only have been that the culprit, if there was one, could have been caught as he fled. This in turn did little to ease Clark's frustration, however, and he spent most of the next 15 minutes thinking about what motive a human culprit could have had for not just intruding upon Phil's home, but for killing him in cold blood. Needless to say, the rest of the wait was filled by thoughts of just what Clark would do to that culprit once he was found and once every useful piece of information had been obtained from his dastardly mind.